Hello? 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 Hello?
If you can hear this, it's not too late. I've returned to warn you. This is Time Pop, a podcast that discusses time travel and pop culture. There are spoilers. I've seen the future, and nothing is sacred to these folks. Your past, present, and future are sure to be ruined. Even if you could go back in time, as I have, you will never forget what you are about to hear. You've been warned. This is Time Pop.
What was I going to do? Welcome, Chrononauts, as we guide you through the experience of time travel using pop culture as Sarah Connor's singular resolve. I am Dez.
And I'm Ari.
And this is
Time Pop.
There we go. Yeah, we talked about Terminator 1, the Terminator, and then talking about this one and the time travel device is so not a thing.
It's not even part of it.
Hi, Ari.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thanks.
This is our second Terminator episode in our Terminator series.
Yes.
Working towards a November release of T6, Dark Fate.
Dark Fate. Ooh.
Yeah. Who, I just realized with some searching last night that Edward Furlong is going to be in.
Which one is he?
He is John Connor in T2.
The kid?
Yeah.
Oh, as himself? As John Connor?
Yes, he is.
Wow.
This is another one of those great sequels where time has caught up with them and there's no reason to recast. You know, they've been recasting him forever trying to get the age right.
Has that actor been acting since? Has he done other things?
A lot. I knew he did some stuff. And I after this movie, of course, everyone wanted a piece of him and he did a couple things. And then I thought he just fell off the face of the earth. But looking at his IMDb, he's been fairly consistent. Well, let me just jump right in then and we'll talk about what they've been doing. Terminator 2 Judgment Day released July 3rd, 1991. So an Independence Day weekend release. That was big. 137 minutes or 153, depending on which cut you watched. The theatrical release was 137 minutes. Rated R, again, written and directed by James Cameron. And one of the other writers was William Wisher, who wrote Terminator the Second. It is a parody of Terminator 2 constructed solely of lines and phrases from the plays of William Shakespeare.
What?
Exactly. I did no more research other than to find out that that exists, and I can just only imagine how crazy that is.
Huh. It's written or it's a movie? What?
I think it got produced.
It's like an actual film we can watch?
Whether or not we can find it, I don't know.
Wow.
I'm going to try to do some YouTube searching and see if I can't drop a a bit in here somewhere.
Wow. I'm very curious about that.
Hell now. What art thou? Are you flesh and blood? Have you a working pulse?
The blood I drop is rather physical than dangerous to me. I am a Terminator, Cyberdyne Systems, Model 101.
Never did I know a creature that did bear the shape of a man. Thou art a strange fellow.
Introducing Edward Furlong from other movies such as American History X, Star Trek Renegades, and as we said, T6 Dark Fate. Have you seen American History X?
With what's his face?
That's the guy.
The guy with the face and the stuff?
Yeah, with the jail and the... I'm trying to think.
Edward Norton.
He's another Edward. That's right.
Ed Norton. Yes.
Yes. Linda Hamilton from two episodes of Frasier, playing two different people. She was a call-in guest once, and then she also appeared on screen, which Frasier, that's way after Terminator 2, so I don't know what she was doing digging up those Frasier bucks. And Hill Street Blues, Arnold Schwarzenegger, a.k.a. Uncle Bob, from Commando, Predator, and True Lies. Joe Morton as Miles Dyson, who I bring up because he is from Eureka, which is a show that we're going to do some episodes on. They have a couple of different time travel episodes that is very cool because they each time they time travel in a little different way. So we can get three or four very different conversations out of that show. And it'll be a great excuse to get Kelly in here because she's our Eureka expert, which is perfect because she had a lot to say about this particular movie too. And then Robert Patrick from X-Files fame, our metal guy, our T-1000.
Mm-hmm.
And Danny Coxey, the redheaded friend of
John Connor,
who I recognize him so much, and he's in a ton of things. I remember him mostly from Different Strokes.
Mm.
I watched a lot of that as kids.
Did he have that mullet in Different Strokes as well?
I think so. I think he was born with that hair.
That thing is epic.
It's beautiful. And he also was in Bill and Ted's TV series.
Bill and Ted had a TV series?
They did.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know how long that added. And then Xander Berkeley, a.k.a. Todd. I mentioned him because he has 237 credits. That dude works hard. Of course, we had plenty of Guns N' Roses in this episode. ILM did the effects. I didn't think they were around yet in 91. As ILM, I know George Lucas was, you know, he had his own studio. And Star Wars.
The effects were great.
They were amazing.
Yeah. Especially for 91.
The practical effects made it age really well. Because, yeah, if everything had been digital, I think it would probably look pretty rough. But the Rotten Tomatoes Critics versus Audience, a 93 to 94. So another great grouping there. I'm going to talk just for a second about everything that is Terminator related, because we're going to really get into it today. We got a quick episode on the Terminator, and this is T2 Judgment Day. And don't worry, folks, we're going to move on to T3 and then Terminator Salvation, Terminator Genesis, getting us ready for the November 1st release of Terminator Dark Fate. So the Terminator in 84, T2, 91, T3, Rise of the Machines, 03, Salvation, 09, and Genesis, 015. And Salvation and Genesis were both an attempt at a trilogy reboot. I didn't realize that, but each one of those was trying to launch another generation of Terminator.
Mm-hmm.
And they have failed their way all the way up to the sixth one, which is just bringing everybody back from T2 to do it right.
Okay.
Then from television, two seasons of the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which you said you watched.
I watched some of it, and I remember liking it. I didn't watch the whole thing start to finish. I think I caught like the beginning of the first season or something, but I thought it was done really well, and I really liked the aspect of, they go into a lot of, from what I remember, the artificial intelligence, computer, not so much time travel, but
I was just going to add, do they talk about it at all? I mean, I guess they have to talk about it, but do they?
I don't, from what I remember, and I think I watched it when it came out, which was a while ago, they don't really talk too much about time travel. It's more about like the Skynet and the robots that are there with them.
Is it do you remember when it takes place? Like, is it supposed to take place between Terminator and T2?
I think,
or
John Connor is in high school, if I remember correctly.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But don't quote me on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that would be, 6 years after the events of this movie.
Yeah, the apocalypse had not happened yet. The bombs had not gone off.
Okay. Which, that timeline. Let's talk about John Connor for a minute.
Okay.
How old do you think he was in this movie?
How old do I think he was supposed to be?
Yes.
I thought he was supposed to be like 12, but, you know, I took it from like the high-pitched squealing cracking of the voice that he was supposed to be about 12, maybe a little younger, no older than 12, I think.
Supposed to be 10.
He's supposed to be 10, okay.
10, yeah. So okay. So the Terminator takes place in real time in 84. She gets pregnant, gives birth to him in 85.
Okay.
The events of this movie, though released in 91, take place in 95.
Okay, so the movie was released in 91, but it's supposed to take place in 95.
Yes.
Okay, so it's supposed to take place in the future. Interesting, okay.
When he is, and I think they do that just so they can have a functioning John Connor, but I don't know why they didn't just make him a teenager. Did they say anything in the Terminator did they say anything about 1997 in the Terminator?
In the first one?
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't 97 when the bombs go off?
Okay, I don't remember that coming up in the first one. So that would make sense that they had to cram it in that timeline. So they needed a young John Connor. They needed him just old enough to function, but still 2 years away from the apocalypse. Because, I mean, they try to, you know, all the training that his mom gives him and stuff like that. So they try to definitely make him seem like an old 10.
Yeah, I mean, the kid was riding like a motorbike in the middle of the street. I don't feel like a 10-year-old would be allowed to do that.
Well, yeah, that was, I mean, I think at any, no matter how you slice it, he was definitely just, that was not a legal situation, whatever that was. So yeah, that just made me rethink this whole movie.
What did?
His age.
Okay. Like,
I just always thought he was a whiny 15-year-old. And the fact that he was an over-functioning 10-year-old.
Okay. Made you look at it differently?
Yeah. I didn't like it.
You didn't like that he was 10?
No.
Why?
I mean, because he's definitely, I think even for a well-educated, war-torn 10-year-old, that was a little high-functioning. For me.
Yeah, I mean, the actor clearly was...
He was 15.
15, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. We'll get to a little bit more of that later. Those are the facts we're dealing with. Ari, give us some fiction.
Give you some fiction, okay.
Tell us about the fiction of this.
So Ari's overview for T2, the movie starts out in... So it is supposed to be 95.
Yes.
I don't know if they actually said that, but the bombs have not gone off, but they know that Sarah knows that the bombs go off in 97 and they're going to kill 3 million people.
Billion.
Million.
Billion.
Is it billion?
It is bees, yeah. Oh,
this whole time I thought it was million. And I even like made a note. I was like, million? Yeah. That's nothing compared to like we just reviewed 12 Monkeys where they killed 5 billion. So it is billion?
It is. Okay. Yeah, 3 million people die. That's not going to overthrow any governments.
That's true. Okay. So billion. Yep. 3 billion people die in they have the exact date, August 29th, which isn't today the 29th?
28.
Oh,
that's awesome. One tomorrow, Skynet.
Yeah.
It goes online.
So, in this story, Skynet in the year 2029 has sent back another Terminator, a new version, a more advanced Terminator, to try to kill John Connor, who is 10, apparently. And 2029 John Connor also sent back another Terminator to protect him. So again, we have a bad Terminator and a good Terminator. Or not again, sorry. The first time it was a human. Just kidding. This time we have a bad Terminator and a good Terminator sent back to try to change the past. I really like the effects this time that they show a little bit more of when someone appears in the past. The lightning again and then the sphere. But anything that the sphere touches, it kind of like melts or destroys.
Yeah, it creates a black hole for a minute and everything is gone.
Which is a cool effect.
Very cool.
And again, the person traveling is naked, cannot take anything back except their own skin and hair, right? Which you mentioned before helps in time travel because then you can't bring anything with you, right? Mm-hmm. To help you in any way. So we see a 10-year-old John Connor who is in foster care and Sarah Connor who is in a mental hospital because she tried to blow up a computer factory and has been telling everyone that robots are going to take over and that there's things called Terminators and time travel is real. So of course people think she's crazy. And she now is a badass.
Yes, she is.
Sarah Connor for the past 10 years has been traveling all throughout like South America, learning guns and fighting and military and how to pick locks and tend to wounds and bringing her kid along with and kind of trying to train him to become this future military leader.
And it looks like Linda Hamilton herself spent the last 10 years training and badassing up for this role.
Yeah, she got strong.
Yeah, she did.
She got very strong, very tough.
It was a great new 90s hairdo.
Yeah, those bangs, man. I kept wanting to just like push them out of her eyes. Like, cut your bangs. They're too long. Okay, so...
Never cut your bangs, Linda.
So we also see a gentleman by the name of Mr. Dyson, who is a engineer scientist computer guy, in a big fancy lab. And in this lab, they alluded to having something, some sort of technology, or they showed it, actually. And one of the lab techs says, "Where did we get it?" And he says, "Don't ask." So they allude to the fact that this scientist in this lab has the parts of the Terminator that were squashed in the last movie. They have his arm and they have his computer chip.
Yes. Is that all they have? That's all we see. Because, yeah, I was thinking, where's the rest of him? Because I forget that he, you know, he's flattened, but intact after the first one. So the hand must have been the one thing that wasn't flattened. Maybe, I don't remember from the first one, but maybe it was hanging out of the press and was the most...
intact.
Yeah.
Yep, so they have his hand and they have his computer chip, even though the computer chip was broken. Later on in the film, they talk about it had technology in it that we had never even thought of, and it brought us in a whole new direction. So... the good Terminator and the bad Terminator both go after John Connor to save. There's lots of fun action chase scenes and fight scenes again. And then the one thing that I wrote here is the good Terminator, meaning Arnold Schwarzenegger, says, you sent me back 35 years from now to protect you. So John Connor actually sent back this Terminator that they had acquired and reprogrammed to be good and to save John Connor. And now we'll get into my only one hole with this movie. We'll get into that later, but it has to do with that.
Noted.
The new Terminator is cool. He's all liquid dude and can like turn into cool shapes, and he's called a T-1000.
Yes.
Pretty badass, pretty cool effects for the time.
Very cool.
Sarah breaks out of the mental hospital and John and Arnold go there to help her. They break out. Bad Terminator is there as well.
Is she already in the process of breaking out when they show up?
Yeah.
She had the paper clip
to pick the lock, and she knocked somebody unconscious.
Drano in the neck.
Yep, Drano in the neck. It's a cool scene. There's, you know, it's a lot of fun action.
Yeah.
Realistic, fun action in this movie. So they find Dyson. They somehow find... they go to Dyson and...
so they go to Mexico just to basically chill out.
Yeah, they get all their guns.
But that's right. They're arming up.
Yeah.
And then Sarah decides she's going to go to Dyson.
Well, that's right. Well, because the Terminator, Arnold tells Sarah that there is the scientist named Dyson who has the part of that old Terminator, and he then builds the computer and he sets everything into motion, which is he builds the computer and then they sell it to the military so that the supercomputer can monitor all of the weapons and things like that. And they bring it online. As soon as they bring it online, it becomes sentient? Is that the word? It becomes conscious, and immediately everybody freaks out, tries to pull the plug on the computer, and that is when the computer launches the bomb. So that happened in August of 97.
So I think it's turned on. Cyberdyne is turned on August 4th, and on August 29th,
is that what it is? Judgment
Day. Yes.
Yes. So Arnold tells Sarah that, you know, it's this scientist, this one guy who puts everything into motion, so let's go change that. And there's this moment where she carves on the table, like, no fate, meaning the future is not set, which is something that Kyle Reese, the father of John Connor, told Sarah when he went back, because that is what John Connor told Kyle Reese to tell her when he sent her back, because that is what Sarah Connor told John Connor as a kid growing up to tell his dad, to tell Sarah when he got there.
So that's, I'm going to jump in now. I was going to save all this for the end, but since we're right here, I didn't realize how well it went together. So in the extended version,
oh, you saw the extended version?
No,
oh.
No, but I looked it up just to see what we were missing. Right there, this is so perfect. Right there, when because she has her vision then, or her dream or whatever.
The recurring dream of the bomb?
Yes. In the extended version, Kyle Reese is in that. In her vision also.
Yeah, I think I heard about that.
So that makes even more sense. The no fate, the like the full circle of everything happening makes even more sense there. So that's
so
cool.
In that moment, Sarah decides she's going to go to Dyson and she's going to kill him to prevent him from ever making this supercomputer, to prevent the bombs, to prevent it all. So,
she goes Terminator on Dyson.
Yeah, she brings a gun, the laser pointer. She goes to his house, tries to kill him, puts a bullet in him. Fortunately, or however unfortunately, the Terminator and young John go after her to stop her. She actually stops herself. She's about to kill him in front of his wife and child, and she like starts to cry and doesn't, and then the Terminator and John show up and they explain to Dyson, like, Terminator rips off his skin and says, recognize this, and it's the same arm as the one he has in the lab.
And this is the first time I've put that together. I always thought it was just to show, like, look, I'm futuristic. How 20 times I've seen this movie, I finally put it together, like, oh no, he's seen the arm, now the arm.
Yeah. So they explain to Dyson everything. They explain what's going to happen. They explain time travel. They explain, you know, what they're trying to do. And Dyson believes them and says, okay, well, we got to destroy it. So they go to the lab to destroy the chip and the hand that they have. And big old fight scene and guns and bombs and smoke. And then the T-1000 shows up. And they end up taking the chip in the arm with them, essentially blowing up the lab.
Yeah, Dyson goes down with the ship.
Yep, Dyson goes down with the ship. So he sets off the bomb. And they end up another chase scene. The T-1000 is chasing them, and they end up in like a metal factory.
Smelting factory. In the middle of the night.
Yeah. It always has to end in a factory, just like the first one.
Yeah.
So they end up melting the T-1000. Sarah gets like shot in the leg and stabbed in the arm. This girl's a badass. And they end up knocking him into a big vat of molten metal lava and melt him in a very dramatic end scene where he's like sinking down. Yeah. And he's changing into all the other people he's ever been and bubbling and done. And so then they say, okay, now we got to throw the chip in there and we got to throw the arm in there. So they do, done. And then Terminator Arnold is like, there's still a chip left. And he points to his head. He's like, I've got to go in there. And, you know, he's like, you got to lower me down because I can't self-terminate. And John Connor's like, no, don't go. I don't know why I'm recreating it. But, you know, you get the sense that, like, there was a scene where Sarah said, you know, of all the men that I ever, for these past 10 years that I maybe linked up with to learn from, this robot is the only one that's the most father figure like, you know, this robot will never hurt him, never leave him, never say I'm too busy for you, and how ironic that is. And so at the end, before the Terminator is gonna go melt himself, John Connor's sad and crying, and there's a moment, and nobody would tear up for that. I mean, that would just be really silly for you to tear up at the end of a movie where, you know, a Terminator is gonna just melt himself. Anyway, so
Azari dabs her eyes.
No, I would never.
Even recreating this situation.
It's not sad at all. So
I know now why you cry.
Yeah, exactly. And so he melts himself. And so then you get the sense that like they changed, they did it. They fixed it. They changed the future. And then the end.
Ta-da!
Ta-da! Yay!
Thanks for listening, folks.
Yeah, bye. So it's just, it's interesting because, you know, they then have three, four, and five.
Yeah.
Movies, and I have not seen any of them, so we will watch them obviously, but my question is where do they go from there? They destroyed the chip. Maybe somewhere the evidence in the lab was in a different location and they had it. Have you seen the other movies?
I have. I don't remember them very well. I've only seen the other three once or twice, and it's been a while. So let's hypothesize. Let's have some fun. Since I don't remember and you've never seen them, what
could happen? How would they bring it back?
Because this is a single timeline. I guess this is kind of a new theory. Because I said single timeline, but I don't get the sense in this story that when they change something in 95, that it ripples forward and the people that sent the Terminators back, lives change instantly.
Like, I mean, we don't know. It could.
I feel like that this changes John Connor's future from 95 forward as to not being set, but there's still, because I guess this is multiple timelines, but I feel like the people in 2029, they're still moving forward from their current present.
So are you saying this, you think this is a single timeline or multiple timelines?
I don't know, because I'm explaining it like multiple timelines, but I also think that people in 2030 could still send someone back to 1990 and retroactively, or 1991, or they're in 95, back to 1995 or 96, and still put this in motion. Like, they could still send the technology back to keep them on track for 97.
They could still do that, which would make it seem like it is a single timeline.
But how does that work in time travel in general? So if they, I mean, I guess that just proves that what's happened has happened, will always happen. And even though they think they've destroyed what's going to create Cyberdyne, they didn't. They're not taking into effect this next T-3000 that's going to come back in 96 and get the information still to these scientists who are going to keep them on track for a 97 release. But how does that, I'm just wondering how that settles in your brain, the idea that at this current moment, John Connor has changed his future, but there's still, but it hasn't changed anything in 2030 because that's still their present.
So I guess technically we don't know at the end of this movie. We don't know if it changed the 2029 or 20 or 97. We don't know. But the thing that I found to be the hole is where the Arnold Schwarzenegger character says, "You sent me back in time, you know, 35 years from now, you sent me back in time to protect you." So in that moment, wouldn't you say, okay, well, it clearly worked because you're alive in 35 years. I sent 35-year-old older me sent something back to protect me, and it clearly worked because I'm alive in 35 years. So I feel like that would have just been like an instant like confidence boost, you know, like, oh, this clearly worked because I'm still alive. Yeah. So that's my first hole is, you know, it worked. Now, as far as...
But you don't know what worked.
Right.
And that's where...
You know, you don't know what worked or how it worked, but at least you can feel a little bit more confident that, okay, we're going to be okay because... Now, the moment that Sarah went to go kill Dyson, at that point, maybe you could be like, okay, that seems like something different. If she goes to kill Dyson to prevent all this stuff from happening, at that point, then maybe you could go, oh, okay, now we've flipped the script, we've changed it, we could potentially still die, you know. But I think, in my opinion, this is a single timeline. The question is whether or not it's the you cannot change the future laws. So no matter what you do in the past, the future outcome is still always the same. That's what we don't know for this. So far with these two movies, that's what we don't know.
Now, is the outcome the same from that perspective? Like, sure, the people in 2030 won't change, but can John Connor still change his future?
Say that again.
So I guess what I'm proposing is that time's linear. And so there's, I guess, basically, does the Terminator franchise suffer from the butterfly effect?
The Skynet?
Just in any way at all, do you think that their timeline is subject to the butterfly effect?
Yeah. I mean, if you think about in a single timeline story, if you go back and change something, it will absolutely change the future.
Yeah. I think I have to think of that. There we go. That's what just made this clear for me is I have to think of it. I think for me, I think this universe is kind of Avengers-like, where think you create multiple timelines, but you can come back to the intersection and re-thread them.
So you think this is a multiple timeline type of story?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
Why?
Because I don't believe that when John Connor sends the Terminator back, so when in Terminator 2, when the T-1000 and the Terminator go back, I think even if they change something, I think that the post-apocalyptic present that John Connor is living in 2030 doesn't change.
So they've created an alternate timeline to whatever change they've made now has a different outcome to the timeline that John sent the Terminator back to.
Right.
Okay. You could be right because there isn't very much time. Both could be right, right?
It could right. Be, yeah. It could yeah. be multiple. Yeah. But, yeah. I'm certainly not right.
Yeah. You're also not wrong.
Yeah.
So it could be true because there isn't very much actual time traveling in this story and there really only is one direction. That absolutely could be true. It really depends on what the writers and the storytellers want you to take from it. They could absolutely, you know, in that case, then the post-apocalyptic timeline could have just kept trying to send back a Terminator back in the first movie when they tried to kill Sarah. When it failed, they could have just sent another one back, created another timeline, sent another one back, created another timeline.
Yes.
But the story writer...
We saw...
But the story writer didn't do that. So realistically, to answer the question of is it one timeline or multiple timelines, you'd have to ask the writer and what they wanted to portray it as.
Did they explain at all in this movie the facility they time traveled with? Because they talk about it getting destroyed in The Terminator. Did he mention anything like, oh yeah, we rebuilt the time machine or...
Nope, not a single thing. The very beginning of the movie, they just said, we sent back a Terminator and so did they.
And has it been... Again, I can't remember The Terminator at all. Did the first from what year did they send the Terminator back for the first movie? Was it 2029 or was it 2024? Has 5 years spanned in both universes?
I thought it was 2029, but I could be wrong. I should have kept my notes.
Yeah, I have them around here somewhere. I'm going to leave that out there. Maybe for T3, I'll break out all the old notes and we'll weave all this together.
From what I remember in the first Terminator movie, they talked about the Kyle Reese piggybacked on the Terminator's first send back. He was able to like get in there before the machine was destroyed. So apparently they rebuild their machine and sent another Terminator back. So that means it must be a little bit time has passed.
We'll figure that out. Yeah, for the next episode, we'll get some more timelines out and thread this together. Why does the T-1000 look like Robert Patrick?
I don't know who that is.
That's the guy that the T-1000 looks like most of the time. And I always thought, when I imagine this movie, I always think that Robert Patrick is the first person he comes in contact with, and that's just the form he takes.
Oh, that's the actor.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he doesn't. That's just his pre-made resolution from the factory.
Right, because the first person he comes in contact with is a cop, but he's like more blonde, and it's not him. Yeah, so I guess he has what he looks like. He has a design, just kind of like how Arnold looks like Arnold. They designed him to look a certain way, and that's...
That's weird.
It's weird?
Yeah, I feel like he should have... Well, no, I mean, I guess he's even if he's not built with that shape, he's already come in contact with things from the future, and he's chosen. It seems like a really simple thing to just have that first copy comes in contact with be Robert Patrick and him just be.
Is
like,
that who it was, the actor? I thought it was a different actor.
Oh, it definitely was. The cop was definitely someone else. But
you mean his clothes?
No, just the whole actor. Like they should have had the T-1000 come back as an amorphous blob or. It just seems like that would have been a good disguise to be an actual person from our time that he comes in contact with. So instead of just stealing the police outfit, why wouldn't you just steal his whole persona?
And that's not what he did?
No.
Yeah, he's his own person. He's his own,
yeah,
what he looks like. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. They want you to blend into society, just like how Arnold
had to. Right, but wouldn't he blend in society even more if he just became that cop?
Yeah.
Instead of, I don't know. I just that's just a simple thing that I always, it seems like as a screenwriter, that would have been something that would have been caught in one of your 27 revisions. Sorry to go off on that. All right. This movie moves really fast.
It does.
This movie clipped along.
It moves fast, but like also not too much happens.
It is just a chase movie.
It's a chase movie, but it's done so well. It's super entertaining and realistic. I mean, besides maybe the helicopter flying into the back of a truck, maybe not as future or as realistic, but it was just really entertaining.
Yeah. Every time we got to a new set piece, I was just like, oh, we're here already? Oh, we're here already? And and looking at all the deleted scenes, they definitely, everything was very purposeful to keep that pace going. Like, mm-hmm. Everything they cut was an interesting scene, but there was obviously a pacing they were shooting for. So in the extended version, when Schwarzenegger says, I can learn, or I'm programmed to learn. They actually program him to learn in the extended version. They actually shut Arnold down, reprogram him, because he comes from the factory set, no changes, period. So that's kind of an interesting little thing. And then, so in, yeah, this would have given us some insight into what kind of future was created through this time-altering situation. The extended edition features an alternate ending which shows an elderly Sarah Connor watching an adult John as a U.S. senator playing with his daughter in a Washington playground in the year 2029.
So in that version, they completely changed it.
They did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I didn't realize when I first wrote this down, I didn't realize that he was playing with his daughter in 2029, that they had completed that entire gap. So that's interesting.
I'm curious to see how the third one is going to pick it up again. We'll just have to watch and see.
just a couple. I mean, these are just plot holes, not really time travel holes. It was so, again, just weird to me that the T-1000, when he's got Sarah Connor, when he's holding her still and he keeps telling her to call to John, he can manipulate anyone's voice. It was strange to me that he didn't just call John. But I kind of mentioned that to get to this other point. So when there are two Sarah Connors at the end, do you know who plays the other Sarah Connor?
Sarah's sister.
Yeah.
I just guessed.
Leslie Hamilton Garing. Linda Hamilton's twin, identical.
Oh, she's a twin sister. Wow.
She does. Yeah. And it is her only credit in IMDb, that 15-second scene.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I thought that was very, I don't know why I didn't. That just seems like something I would have picked up along the line. And I don't remember the two Sarah Connors at all. Like, that scene kind of took me by surprise when I saw it. I was like, oh, yeah.
It's very brief. It's,
yeah. And I don't remember what she does. Like, John knows immediately who's who. And I don't remember what she does to tip him off.
Well, the real Sarah tells her son to get down while she's pointing a gun at the other one. So...
Yes, the preservation of your your child. That's a dead giveaway, something the T-1000 doesn't have. So yeah, so I guess we're just moving forward to try to figure out what kind of timeline we're actually dealing with. Single, multiple, are we going to change things, not change things? And I'm excited to cruise through this now. Like, yeah. Again, I thought this one movie was going to clear things up again, but it just moves us on to the next piece. So we can try to figure this out. Oh! Real quick, so you have anything to add about T2? All right, then we're going to move on to something different for a second. I have been reading some books on time, and one of them is just about time in general, which is interesting. And then I have also started a time travel series of books that I'm excited about. The one book, this is just interesting, just, you know, since all we do is talk about time and all of its forms. It's called Internal Time, Chronotypes, Social Jet Lag, and Why You're So Tired.
Interesting.
And it's this book, and it's just all about are basically clocks on a cellular level, including plants and flowers and humans. And it's just, it's really interesting, some of the stuff they did, like in the, I don't know what year, but they basically locked people away where they couldn't see the sun at all for weeks at a time just to see what naturally occurred. And most people fall to about a 23-hour clock, for what it's worth. Like,
meaning they, what does that mean?
Like, every day you'll go to sleep about an hour earlier.
Interesting.
Even though there's no clock there, and you just kind of, you know, get tired when you get tired, and you wake up when you're done sleeping, and you eat when you're hungry, and you, people tend to fall back on a 23-hour clock. But yeah, it's, I'm only about halfway through it. It's getting really scientific and really crazy, but it's just a really interesting thing of how, you know, because time is kind of a human construct, you know, as far as how we track it. And so it's interesting to see what, when you break out of that clock space, how we, you know, work things out through the day. And there are definitely, again, on a cellular level, everyone's a little bit different, you know, like morning, there are morning people and evening people and all that stuff. And that's baked into our DNA pretty much. And
yeah,
at some point we're going to have to really rethink.
There's even genetic for how much sleep you need.
Yeah.
There's people who genetically don't need as much sleep as other people.
What do you need?
Oh, I need a solid 9.
Yeah.
I'm like, give me my sleep. If I get 8, I'm all right. If I get 7, I'm grumpy. I need my 9.
I'm definitely, yeah, 7 or over. And I can break that cycle for 1 or 2 nights, but that's it. If I get 6 2 nights in a row, I'm getting 10 on that third night.
Yeah.
And the other one, so Kelly, she's read a couple of these books, and I've been wanting to start them forever, and I just finally started the St. Mary's Chronicles. Book one is called Just One Damned Thing After Another, and it's about historic time travel. It's about this group of historians, and they time travel to just observe and just take real historical data from that time. And I've just dipped my toe in it. I'm sure things go horribly wrong.
Is it historical fiction?
I think they do deal with, so far they've only mentioned real historical things. I don't know if it eventually breaks off just for its own manipulation of time, so they can change things without feeling like they've screwed up our are present as the reader.
Yeah.
But we'll see. So yeah, so those are two things I just wanted to mention in case, especially the St. Mary's Chronicles. I'll be just kind of mentioning that throughout a couple of podcasts and telling everyone where it's going. And I'm sure they're decent sized books. I'm getting them read to me, of course. So we will do that. All right, now for some contact info. Thank you for listening to Time Pop. Hopefully you've made it this far because you have enjoyed the program. Please like and subscribe to Time Pop and tell a neighbor or friend about it so you can enjoy a discussion of your own on the topic of time travel. You might even find a movie partner to enjoy some of these films with. And for planning purposes, I do my best to post Sunday about Wednesday's release so you guys can get ahead of it and be prepared for our show. If you would like to add to the conversation, please email us at timepop9216, that's timepop9216@gmail.com. Tell us your thoughts about this particular depiction of time travel and how you might use it. And definitely let us know about a time travel movie, book, game, etc. that we might discuss on a future episode. And if you would like to start your own discussion on this topic, please head over to Face Insta Twitter Book. We are at teapot9216, that is at teapot9216. And please check out soundsawesome9216.com to hear what else sounds awesome. And now, back to the big finish.
Dun, 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 dun. They definitely played that up more in the second movie than the first movie.
Big time.
Yeah. And they, of course, say all the same, you know, I'll be back and come with me if you want to live. And
all that stuff. I wanted to, before I totally sign off. Oh, very horror filmy. A lot of the score sounded like a horror film. I thought that was just.
That's how the first one was too, right?
I don't remember it as much. It probably was. I just forgot his name. James Cameron just really has a style that he sticks to, and he does it, and he does it well.
Like, yeah, I agree.
I like directors who just know what their strong point is and you know, play that role and hit it out of the park. Oh, when they're driving in the car, I don't remember where they're getting away from. I think it's when they get out of the mental institute. That car ride is the worst effect in the whole movie. I swear they must have done it just to make the liquid metal effects look even better. It looks like a 1950s movie in the car, and they're obviously in a studio, and there are things being projected on the screen to make it look like they're driving through down a dirt road, and it's so crazy. Of all the aged effects that could have really stood out, that one had to have looked awful in 1991. So I thought that was just worth bringing up. I would be remiss if I didn't give an Edward Furlong speech for my lovely wife, Kelly. She was going to maybe be here today. She was super excited to watch this movie. And she was... One of the biggest reasons she wanted to be on this episode was so that she could go on and on about how much she hated Edward Furlong in this movie. And she, like me, found him not quite as annoying as she remembered. She, you know, it definitely helped when we found out that he was 10 years old. But even at that, I think, you know, when we were in our 20s, he was a real annoying little shit. And now that we've grown up and he's just a kid trying his best, he was far less annoying than either one of us imagine. So for me and Kelly, Eddie, good job. Can't wait to see you in T6. Until next week, which probably won't be T3. I think we're gonna maybe every other one so we don't get Terminator fatigue. We'll see you next week. Thank you for listening. I have been Desmond McNeese.
And Ariel Galah.
Bye.
Bye.
It is you that chalk forth the way which brought me hither, and hither am I come, a prologue armed.